A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Daniel sent us this one. He's asking about the radio guts of consumer drones, specifically how something like a DJI Mavic actually talks to its controller. The prompt zeroes in on the line of sight limitation that most of us run into the first time we try to push a drone further than it wants to go, and then asks the obvious follow-up. If military drones can be flown from the other side of the planet, what's the magic ingredient, and is any of that trickling down to consumers yet?
It's a perfectly timed question. Fiber optic drones, the ones trailing a spool of micro cable behind them so they emit zero radio frequency, have gone from a curiosity to a genuine battlefield problem in the last 18 months. Hezbollah's been using them against IDF positions, and they've scrambled a lot of assumptions about what jamming can and can't do.
The radio equivalent of cutting the cord while keeping the cord.
A fiber spool is the ultimate anti-jam, but it also puts a hard physical ceiling on range and maneuverability. So it forces this question, what are we actually giving up when we cut the radio link, and what are the alternatives? Let's start with the radio stack in the drone most people have actually touched.
Let's start with the radio link you're most likely to encounter, the one in a DJI drone. Here's exactly how it works and why it fails.
DJI's current flagship protocol is OcuSync 4.0, which ships on the Mavic 3 series and the Air 3. It operates in the 2.4 GHz and 5.8 GHz ISM bands. Those are the unlicensed industrial, scientific, and medical bands that Wi-Fi, Bluetooth, and your microwave oven all share. The modulation scheme is OFDM, Orthogonal Frequency Division Multiplexing, which is the same family of techniques that Wi-Fi 6 and 5G use. It splits the signal across dozens of subcarriers so that if some frequencies get hammered by interference, the rest still get through.
The marketing material says 15 kilometers of range.
In open air, with zero interference, perfect line of sight, and the RC Pro controller with its higher gain antennas, yes, DJI claims up to 15 kilometers, but that's the FCC version, which is allowed to transmit at an EIRP of 30 dBm, which is 1 watt. The European CE version is capped at 20 dBm, about 100 milliwatts, and the practical range drops to maybe 8 kilometers in ideal conditions.
Ideal conditions means flying over the ocean with nobody around.
The moment you introduce anything that blocks or reflects the signal, the range collapses. The big killer is the Fresnel zone. Imagine an invisible cigar-shaped volume between the controller and the drone. If more than about 40% of that zone is obstructed by terrain, buildings, or even tree canopy, the signal attenuates dramatically. In an urban canyon like Manhattan, a Mavic 3 can lose its video downlink at 1.2 kilometers. I've seen this tested. The spec sheet says 15K, reality says just over 1K when you're surrounded by steel and glass reflecting signals in every direction.
The spec sheet is the drone equivalent of a car's EPI mileage rating, achievable only if you're driving downhill with a tailwind.
The drone equivalent of a car commercial shot on a closed course. Professional driver, do not attempt.
What's actually inside that bidirectional link?
It's two streams. The downlink, drone to controller, carries compressed video at 720p or 1080p, running at about 15 to 20 megabits per second. The uplink, controller to drone, carries telemetry commands and flight control data at roughly 100 kilobits per second. That asymmetry makes sense, you need high bandwidth to see where you're going, but telling the drone to pitch forward 2 degrees is a tiny packet.
The drone connects to the controller directly, like a Wi-Fi client to an access point. It's not forming some kind of mesh.
It's a point-to-point client relationship. The controller is the access point. The drone is the station. If that link drops for more than a configurable timeout, typically 3 to 5 seconds, the drone triggers return to home. And this is where people get confused. Return to home isn't an extension of radio control. The drone isn't being guided back by the pilot over some backup channel. It's flying a pre-programmed GPS path to the recorded home point using its onboard flight controller. The radio link is dead, and the drone is on autopilot.
Which is terrifying if you lost signal because you flew behind a building and the RTH altitude is set lower than the building.
That's the classic, my drone turned into a pancake on the side of a skyscraper scenario. The failsafe only works if you've configured it correctly for the environment you're flying in.
What about the FPV world? The racing and freestyle drones? Different radio stack entirely.
Completely different philosophy. Analog FPV uses 5.8 GHz video transmitters, typically 25 to 200 milliwatts, paired with directional patch or helical antennas on the pilot's goggles. Range is 1 to 3 kilometers with good antennas, and the video is raw analog NTSC or PAL, no compression, no encryption, no handshake. Anyone with a receiver on the same frequency can watch your feed. Jamming it is trivial, just blast noise on 5.8 GHz and the pilot screen goes to static.
The musical equivalent of beige wallpaper.
It's the AM radio of drone control. But the advantage is latency. Analog FPV has sub-millisecond glass-to-glass latency, which is why racers use it. DJI's digital system has about 28 milliseconds of latency, which is still excellent but not zero. And in racing, every millisecond counts when you're threading a gap at 60 miles per hour.
To answer the first part of the prompt directly, consumer drones are line of sight, using unlicensed ISM bands, with a practical ceiling of about 4 to 10 kilometers in the real world, and the 15-kilometer spec is a laboratory number.
That ceiling is enforced by physics and regulation, not just technology. The FCC and CE power limits are hard caps. You can't legally boost your transmitter beyond 30 dBm EIRP in the US, and even if you could, the inverse square law is unforgiving. Double the distance, quarter the signal strength. At 15 kilometers, even with a 1-watt transmitter, the signal at the drone's receiver is below the noise floor if there's any obstruction at all.
Why can a military drone fly 200 kilometers from its operator? What's the actual difference?
That 10-kilometer ceiling is a hard limit for consumer gear. But military drones routinely fly 1,000 kilometers from their operators. The difference is a satellite in geostationary orbit.
Which we should probably explain before people imagine their DJI connecting to a Starlink terminal.
Let's walk through the MQ-9 Reaper as the canonical example. The Reaper has two data links. The first is a C-band line-of-sight link that covers the first roughly 200 kilometers. This is the local control mode used for takeoff and landing, handled by a ground crew at the airbase. Once the aircraft is at altitude and heading into theater, it switches to the beyond line-of-sight mode, which uses a Ku-band satellite link.
Ku-band being 12 to 18 gigahertz.
The Reaper has a gimbaled dish antenna in its nose. It looks like a small satellite TV dish that tracks a geostationary satellite. That satellite relays the signal to a ground control station, which could be at Creech Air Force Base in Nevada while the Reaper is flying over the Middle East. The data rate on that Ku-band link can reach up to 274 megabits per second for full motion video. That's enough to stream multiple high definition sensor feeds simultaneously. This is the part that surprises people. A geostationary satellite sits at 35,786 kilometers above the equator. The round trip, ground station, up to the satellite, down to the drone, and back, is about 71,572 kilometers. Even at the speed of light, that's a minimum of about 540 milliseconds. Add processing delays, encryption handshakes, and routing, and you're looking at 1 to 2 seconds of total latency.
The pilot moves the stick, and the drone reacts a second and a half later.
Which is fine for a Predator or Reaper loitering at 20,000 feet and tracking a ground target. It's completely unworkable for anything that requires real-time reaction. Aerial combat, nap of the earth flying, landing in a crosswind. That's why the C-band line-of-sight link exists for the critical phases of flight. The satellite link is for the boring middle part where the drone is just transiting or orbiting.
The satellite itself. This isn't Starlink. This is the Wideband Global SATCOM Constellation, military-owned, military-encrypted.
WGS is a constellation of geostationary satellites operated by the U.S. Space Force. They provide X-band and K-band coverage, and the terminals are not something you can buy at Best Buy. A portable ground station for military SATCOM runs $50,000 and up, and the frequency allocations are reserved for military use. Encryption is handled by the HQIC and Saturn frequency hopping protocols, which are classified. A consumer is never going to tap into this.
The military path is a closed door, but the prompt asked about a middle ground. Something between 10 kilometers of LOS and global SAT SCOM that an ordinary person could actually build.
That middle ground is already in your pocket. It's 4G and 5G cellular. The idea is deceptively simple. Put a cellular modem on the drone, stick a SIM card in it, and connect to it over the internet from anywhere. The drone becomes just another IP endpoint.
Instead of a direct radio link from the controller to the drone, the controller talks to a ground station, a laptop, or a phone, which talks to a cell tower, which talks to the drone's onboard modem.
And this isn't theoretical. Companies like Holybro sell a 4G LTE telemetry kit for Ardu Pilot and PX4 drones for about $200. It uses a Quectel EC25 modem, which is an industrial-grade LTE Cat4 module. You plug it into the drone's flight controller, configure a VPON or a direct IP connection, and you can fly the drone from a laptop anywhere with internet access.
$200 to turn a line of sight drone into something that can fly 20 kilometers behind enemy lines. That feels like a significant price to capability ratio.
It's the kind of asymmetry that keeps defense planners up at night. Ukrainian reconnaissance units have been using exactly this setup. Commercial drones with 4G control modules flying 20 plus kilometers behind Russian lines, with Starlink terminals providing the internet backhaul at the ground station. The drone itself costs a few $1,000s, the control system costs $200. The whole package is cheaper than a single Javelin missile.
DJI themselves have dipped a toe in this. The Mavic 3 has an optional DJI cellular dongle.
Released in 2024, yes. It provides 4G backup control when the main OcuSync link drops. But DJI has deliberately limited it. It only works within a 15-kilometer radius of the home point, and it requires a DJI-branded SIM card. It's a safety net, not a range extender. They're clearly aware of the regulatory implications of selling a consumer drone with no range limit.
The FII's Part 107 waiver process for beyond visual line of sight is famously slow and expensive. DJI doesn't want to be the company that put 1,000 blows drones in the air the week before the Super Bowl.
But the DIY community doesn't have those constraints. Ardu Pilot has a Follow Me mode that works over 4G. You can set it up with a Raspberry Pi running Mavlink over a UDP tunnel, and the drone will follow the GPS position reported by your ground station phone. The latency is 50 to 150 milliseconds compared to 10 to 20 milliseconds for direct LOS. That's a factor of 5 to 10 times higher, but for a drone that's loitering or surveying, it's completely adequate.
What's the failure mode when the cell network goes down?
Same as when the radio link drops. Return to home on GPS. But here's the thing. Cell networks are not designed for aerial use. The antennas on cell towers are tilted downward because they're optimized for ground-level users. A drone at 100 meters altitude is above the main beam of most cell sectors. It might see signal from multiple towers simultaneously, which causes interference rather than better connectivity. And if you're flying in a rural area, the cell coverage might be a single tower every 10 to 15 kilometers. Lose that tower, and you lose the drone.
It's a Swiss cheese of coverage, especially at altitude.
There's the congestion problem. Cell towers are shared infrastructure. If you're flying during a busy period, say a festival or a disaster evacuation, the network can deprioritize your drone's traffic. Most consumer SIM cards don't have quality of service guarantees. Your drone's telemetry is competing with thousands of people scrolling Instagram.
Which brings us back to fiber optics. The prompt mentioned Israel facing challenges from fiber optic drones. What's the actual threat model?
A fiber optic drone carries a spool of microcable, typically 0.5 millimeter diameter fiber, weighing about 200 grams per kilometer. A 10 to 20 kilometer spool adds 2 to 4 kilograms to the drone's weight, which is significant but manageable for a larger quadcopter or fixed wing. The fiber unspools passively as the drone flies, and the ground station communicates through it with zero radio emissions.
Zero emissions means zero detection by signals intelligence and zero vulnerability to jamming.
It's the electronic warfare equivalent of a stealth fighter. You can't jam a fiber optic cable. You can't intercept it without physically tapping it. You can't detect the drone by its radio signature because there is no radio signature. The only way to find it is visually or acoustically, and a small drone at 500 feet is very hard to spot.
The countermeasure, then, is kinetic. You shoot it down.
Or you find the ground station and destroy that, which is also hard because the fiber can be run through buildings, tunnels, or foliage. Hezbollah has been using these against IDF observation posts and Iron Dome batteries. The drone loiters at altitude, streams high-quality video back through the fiber, and provides real-time intelligence that can't be jammed or intercepted.
The IDF's usual response, GPS spoofing, radio jamming, electronic warfare, does nothing.
It's completely irrelevant. The fiber drone is a hard counter to the entire electronic warfare playbook. That's why it's such a significant tactical shift. It's not a better radio, it's the elimination of radio.
We've got three tiers now. Tier 1, consumer LOS, 10 kilometers max, unlicensed bands vulnerable to interference and jamming. Tier 2, 4G cellular, 20 to 30 kilometers in rural areas, nationwide and urban, 50 to 150 milliseconds latency, dependent on terrestrial infrastructure. Tier 3, military SATCOM, global range, 1 to 2 seconds latency, encrypted, $50,000 plus for the ground station.
Tier 0, which we haven't mentioned, analog FPV, 1 to 3 kilometers, zero encryption, trivial to jam, but sub-millisecond latency. It's the tier you use when you're flying through a concrete parking garage at 40 miles per hour and every millisecond counts.
Or when you're delivering a grenade to a trench and you don't care if the feed goes static after the drop.
Grim, but accurate.
Let's talk about spread spectrum and frequency hopping, because the prompt asked about radio networks, and there's a common misconception that frequency hopping makes a link unjammable.
OcuSync uses adaptive frequency hopping. It monitors the spectrum in real time and jumps between channels to avoid interference. In the 2.4 GHz band, it's hopping between roughly 13 to 20 channels depending on the region. If a jammer is blasting noise across the entire band, frequency hopping doesn't help. You're just hopping from one noisy channel to another. What OcuSync is really good at is avoiding Wi-Fi routers and other drones, not defeating a dedicated jammer.
It's collision avoidance, not electronic countermeasures.
True jam resistance requires spread spectrum techniques like DSSS, direct sequence spread spectrum where the signal is spread across a much wider bandwidth using a pseudo-random code. The jammer would need to jam the entire spread bandwidth, which requires vastly more power. Some open source systems use DSSS in the 900 MHz ISM band, which also has better penetration through foliage and buildings because lower frequencies diffract around obstacles more effectively.
900 MHz is the LoRa and LoRaWAN band 2.
And the trade-off is data rate. 900 MHz DSSS might get you 50 to 100 kilobits per second, which is fine for telemetry, but nowhere near enough for video. If you want jam-resistant video, you need to go to higher frequencies with more bandwidth, which brings you back to the jamming problem. It's a fundamental trade-off, jam resistance versus data rate.
The prompt also asked about whether military drones use the same frequencies as consumer drones, just with more power. That's a misconception worth addressing directly.
Military drones use dedicated military frequency bands that are completely separate from the ISM bands. The C-band used by the MQ-9 for line of sight is around 4 to 8 GHz, which overlaps with some satellite downlink frequencies, but not with consumer Wi-Fi. The Ku-band satellite link is 12 to 18 GHz. These frequencies are allocated by the International Telecommunication Union specifically for military and government use. A civilian transmitting on these bands would be in violation of federal law in most countries, and the hardware simply isn't available on the commercial market.
Even if you could get the hardware, the encryption layer would stop you. Military data links use Type 1 encryption, which is hardware-based and keyed with classified algorithms.
The Havequick frequency hopping pattern alone is generated by a classified algorithm seeded with a crypto key that changes daily. Without that key, you can't even predict which frequency the link will be on from 1 millisecond to the next, let alone demodulate the signal. It's not a matter of more power, it's an entirely different architecture.
To wrap up the military side, the secret sauce isn't a bigger amplifier. It's a satellite relay infrastructure that's been built over decades at a cost of billions of dollars, using frequency bands reserved by international treaty, protected by encryption that's backed by the full weight of the U.S. National Security Agency.
The latency penalty of geostationary satellites is an immutable fact of physics. The speed of light is the speed of light. The only way to reduce it is to use satellites in lower orbits, which is exactly what Starlink and other LEO constellations do.
Which brings us to the future. The prompt asked about a middle ground, and I think the most interesting development is the convergence of 5G and low Earth orbit satellites.
5G standalone networks, which are just starting to roll out, include something called network slicing. This lets the carrier reserve a slice of the network with guaranteed latency and bandwidth for specific applications. A drone operating on a 5G slice could have sub-50 millisecond latency with guaranteed throughput even in a congested cell. That starts to approach the performance of a direct LOS link, but with the range of the entire cellular network.
When you combine that with LEO satellite backhaul, Starlink or OneWeb feeding the cell tower, you effectively have consumer satellite drone control without needing a satellite terminal on the drone itself.
The drone talks 5G to the tower talks Starlink to the internet, and the pilot talks to the internet from anywhere. Each hop adds latency, but we're talking maybe 100 milliseconds total, which is still a tenth of what a geostationary military link gets you.
The irony being that a consumer with a 5G drone and a Starlink dish might have lower latency control than a Reaper pilot at Creech.
The Reaper pilot would have better encryption, better jam resistance, and a much larger aircraft with much more capable sensors. But on the pure metric of control latency, yes, physics favors the low orbit.
We've seen the two extremes, 10-kilometer consumer LOS and global military SATCOM. But there's a middle ground that's already in your pocket. Here's how to use it.
If you want to build a 4G drone control system today, the cheapest and most accessible path is ArduPilot running on a Pixhawk flight controller with a Holibro or custom 4G telemetry module. The Quectel EC25 modem I mentioned earlier is widely available and well documented. You'll need a SIM card with a data plan, ideally one that gives you a public IP address or supports a VPON like Zero Tier or Tailscale so you can reach the drone from anywhere.
The ground station can be as simple as a laptop running Mission Planner or Q Ground Control, connected to the internet. The drone appears as a UDP endpoint, and you send Mavlink commands over the tunnel.
The latency you'll see is typically 100 to 200 milliseconds, depending on network conditions. You can test this before flying by pinging the drone's onboard computer. If you're using a Raspberry Pi companion computer, just SSH in and run a ping test. If you're seeing more than 300 milliseconds of round-trip time, don't fly. The control loop becomes unstable.
What about antenna placement on the drone? The cell modem's antenna matters a lot.
The stock PCB antennas that come with most LTE modules are omnidirectional and not optimized for aerial use. You want a properly tuned antenna with a ground plane mounted on the bottom of the drone if possible, because the cell towers are below you. Some builders use a small patch antenna with a slight downward tilt, and keep the antenna away from the drone's carbon fiber frame. Carbon fiber is conductive and will detune the antenna.
For jamming resistance at the consumer level, what's the best option right now?
The 900 MHz band with DSSS is the most practical starting point. Systems like the RFD900X or the Sci-K telemetry radios operate in the 900 MHz ISM band and use frequency hopping spread spectrum. They're not military grade, but they're significantly more resistant to casual jamming than a 2.4 GHz Wi-Fi link. The downside is data rate. You're getting maybe 64 kilobits per second, which is enough for telemetry, but not for video. If you need video, you're back to 5.8 GHz analog or a digital system with compression, both of which are more vulnerable.
The jam resistance setup is 900 MHz telemetry, plus either a fiber spool for video or a very directional 5.8 GHz antenna with a tracking mount.
The tracking mount is a whole other subsystem. You need a pan-tilt mechanism that keeps the directional antenna pointed at the drone based on its GPS position. That's a project in itself. Stepper Motors GPS Fusion may be an IMU for smoothing. It's doable, but now you're building a ground station that costs more than the drone.
The fiber spool starts to look elegant by comparison. 200 grams per kilometer. Passive. Unjammable.
The engineering challenge with fiber is the deployment mechanism. The spool has to unspool with near zero tension or the fiber snaps. A 0.5 millimeter fiber has a breaking strength measured in grams, not kilograms. The spool mechanism typically uses a motorized payoff that matches the drone's speed, and even then, wind can cause the fiber to whip and tangle. It's not a beginner project.
Like adopting a feral cat.
I was going to say, like threading a needle while riding a bicycle, but yours works too.
Let's talk about the regulatory landscape, because the technical capability has outraced the legal framework by a wide margin.
In the United States, the FII requires a Part 17 waiver for any beyond visual line of sight operation. The waiver process requires you to demonstrate that you can detect and avoid other aircraft, which typically means equipping the drone with an ADS-B receiver or an onboard radar system. The waiver process can take months and cost thousands of dollars in legal and engineering fees. Most hobbyists simply ignore it, which is technically a federal offense.
In a conflict zone like Ukraine, none of this matters. The regulatory framework is don't get shot down.
The Ukrainians have been operating 4G drones with zero regulatory oversight because the alternative is Russian artillery finding their position. The calculus changes when the downside of following the rules is death. What we're seeing in Ukraine is a preview of what consumer drone technology looks like when all constraints are removed, and it's both impressive and terrifying.
The prompt mentioned fiber optic drones as an unprecedented challenge for Israel. What's the specific tactical scenario?
Hezbollah has been using commercially derived fiber optic drones for reconnaissance and, in some cases, for direct attack. The drone is launched from a concealed position, flies at low altitude to avoid radar, and trails a fiber optic cable back to the launch point. The operator gets a high-quality, zero-latency video feed that cannot be jammed or intercepted. The IDF's Iron Dome radar systems and electronic warfare suites are completely blind to it.
Because there's no radar signature from a small quadcopter flying below the radar horizon, and no radio emissions to triangulate.
The drone is a flying camera with a really long wire. The only way to counter it is to physically destroy it, which requires detecting it first, and detecting a small quiet drone at low altitude is a hard problem. The IDF has been investing in acoustic detection systems and optical sensors, but those are point defense solutions. You can't cover an entire border with microphones.
Which brings us back to the core insight of the prompt. Understanding the radio link is the first step to either extending it or breaking it. If you're defending against drones, you need to know what you're up against. If it's an RF-controlled drone, jamming works. If it's a 4G drone, you can try to jam the cell towers or negotiate with the carrier to shut down specific sectors. If it's a fiber drone, you need kinetic solutions.
If it's a military SATCOM drone, you're not jamming it at the consumer level. You're calling in an air defense battery. The tier you're facing determines the countermeasure you need.
For the listener who wants to experiment with 4G drone control, what's the shopping list?
You need a Pixhawk or similar flight controller running ArduPilot, a 4G telemetry module like the Holybro kit with the Quectel EC25 modem, a SIM card with a data plan that allows incoming connections or works with a VP on, a Raspberry Pi or similar companion computer if you want to run custom software, and a ground station, a laptop running Mission Planner or Q Ground Control. Total cost, excluding the drone airframe, is about $300 to $400.
The first test should not be a 20-kilometer flight.
Start with the drone on the bench, propellers off. Verify the 4G link is stable. Ping the drone from the ground station and check the latency. Then do a short line-of-sight flight with the 4G link as a backup. Only after you've verified that everything works reliably should you attempt a beyond line-of-sight flight. And even then, make sure your return-to-home fail-safes are configured correctly. A 4G drone that loses its cell connection with no GPS lock is a flyaway waiting to happen.
The open question I keep coming back to, as 5G standalone networks with ultra-low latency slices become widespread, expected in 2027 to 2028, will consumer drones shift entirely to cellular control, making dedicated RF links obsolete?
I think we'll see a bifurcation. For consumer photography drones, the direct RF link will persist because it's simpler, doesn't require a data plan, and works in areas with no cell coverage, mountains, deserts, oceans. But for commercial applications, delivery drones, inspection drones, agricultural survey, cellular control is going to become the default. The economics are compelling. Why build your own radio infrastructure when the entire planet is already covered by cell towers?
The military implications are significant. A commercial delivery drone network is effectively a pre-deployed fleet of beyond line-of-sight aircraft with nationwide range. The line between FedEx and the Air Force gets blurry.
The convergence of consumer drone hardware with military-grade software. Open-source autopilots running on DJI airframes means the line between toy and weapon is blurring faster than regulators can respond. $1,000 buys you a drone that can carry a payload 20 kilometers controlled over 4G with a flight controller that can run fully autonomous missions. That capability didn't exist 10 years ago. 10 years from now, it'll be $100.
The radio link is the drone's weakest link. Understanding it is the first step to either extending it or breaking it.
The takeaway from this whole conversation, if you're building a long-range drone, the cheapest path to 20-plus kilometer control is a 4G LTE module with a good cellular data plan. Expect 100 to 200 milliseconds of latency. For jamming resistance, spread spectrum in the 900 MHz band gives you better penetration and jam resistance at the cost of lower data rates. And the military SATCOM path is not accessible to consumers. But the 4G and 5G path is effectively consumer SATCOM by another name.
If you've built a 4G drone control system, we want to hear about it. Email us at prompts@myweirdprompts.com. Tell us what hardware you used, what latency you're seeing, and what broke the first time you tried it. And now, Hilbert's daily fun fact.
In the 1940s, a British archivist in Somaliland discovered a lost manuscript of the ancient Greek geographer Ptolemy that had been preserved for centuries in a monastery. The parchment's optical property, faint purple ink visible only under oblique sunlight, was what allowed him to identify it as a rare palimpsest from the 3rd century.
Purple ink only visible at an angle. That's either a lost masterpiece or a very elaborate shopping list. This has been My Weird Prompts. If you enjoyed this episode, leave us a review wherever you listen. It genuinely helps new listeners find the show. Thanks to our producer, Hilbert Flumingtop, for making this sound like a real podcast and not two animals arguing about radio frequencies in a basement.
We'll be back next week.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The hosts dig in, the hosts dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too. From half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long-eared host. My weird prompts, until next time. Stay curious, keep weird in mind.